College basketball fans, welcome to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to talk, what else? March Madness, man. We are down to four. The Final Four is here. Starts Saturday, obviously. You have, besides Monday night, you had the week off, and I mean the women's tournament, of course. But the game started at 5 Central on TBS, NC State and Purdue, and then Bama and UConn at 7:49. Of course, it's Central Time, TBS. You know, we talked about how there was a fair amount of chalk and how NC State actually was the only one in the Sweet 16 double digits. And here they are in the Final Four. And even Bama, you didn't really feel like confidently like they were going to go to the Final Four. But then, of course, UConn, I mean, these runs that they've done of late, especially obviously in their last game, but the last two, just it's just unbelievable. But so believable, but unbelievable. I mean, this team is so strong. And then Purdue proved a lot of doubters wrong. Here they are trying to do what Virginia did a few years back, getting beat in the first round, coming back and trying to win the whole thing. So we're definitely going to break down Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday stuff, Sweet 16, Elite Eight. Then break down these games. It'll be a little bit short, and we're not going to go an hour and 10 minutes or whatever. Life's kind of getting in the way today, so we got to do what we got to do. But if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitoperadio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk or Rope It Open. Download the show directly there. If you don't want to, you can find this here College Ball Show under Rope and Dope Radio on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio. Download the podcast app, Google Podcasts, Player FM, Podbay, Podtail, Podbean, whole bunch of different places. While you're at it, head on over to thegrillingchew.com and Sports News 24. One real more quick DirecTV streaming message. You know, obviously, the moment is here, and you need cable, right, with TBS. So you can still save $30 if you sign up for DirecTV Stream. Catch all the action, both men's and women's college basketball. Also, now that the MLB has kicked in, you can get home field advantage. DirecTV Stream carries the most local MLB games. So play ball. For a limited time, $98.99 a month for the first 3 months when you sign up for DirecTV Stream and get the choice package. The first month of DirecTV Sports Pack is on us when you sign up. That's a savings of $14.99. And, yeah, just that entertainment and sports pack right now, $84.98 for the first 3 months. That's the entertainment package, no annual contracts, no hidden fees. Choose the DirecTV streaming package that's right for you. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Marshall. First and foremost, how are you doing, sir? And, you know, we'll start to kind of dig into some of this stuff all the way back to all the way back to Thursday and whatnot. Obviously, we had a variety of fun games, tight games that kind of came down to the wire. Like I said, we got a little bit of everything, and it's funny when you see the national championship odds, right? And obviously, some of this is just getting to the Final Four, first and foremost. Like I said, NC State was a plus 12,000. Bama was the fourth-rated team here, plus 3,600. It's just fun when you get some, and obviously, you know, UConn and Purdue were top four, top three, actually, when it comes to that. But, you know, we got a lot of upsets in the first round. We mentioned all those 10, 11, 12 seeds, but then it kind of shrunk up on us, but we knew there were going to be good games, and some of them turned out to be really good games. But I kind of like the two number one seeds of 4 and 11, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it is a good variety, Chris, and life is going pretty good. It's a busy week this week, so that's why we're knocking this out now. So, but hey, we got time for people to listen and think about their picks for Saturday. But yeah, I think last weekend did have some great games, some rough games, or rough as in like, man, like I was hoping this game would be a little bit closer, and it wasn't. For a couple of those, UConn
or some first halves that were like 27-22, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's some ugly shooting too, but overall it was a wide variety of a bunch of good stuff. You're right. Oh, I mean, my first takeaway is, man, this UConn team is different, sir. They're built different. They're special. you went on a 30-0 run against the top offense rated by computers in the country. That's not normal. To go on a 30-0 run alone in basketball is insane, but to do it against a team who has the highest rated offense in the country with an NBA lottery player on that team, as long as he doesn't get in trouble in the law, like, damn. So I could only imagine being an Illinois fan at halftime. You're up 20, you're down 2 points.
Well, let's talk about the Sweet 16 first.
Fair enough.
Let's just jump right to that.
Yeah, but. You're right. Okay. UConn's special. UConn is special. Hey, but for Sweet 16, though. Right. Well,
I mean, let's start with that UConn San Diego State because it was like 28 or 20 to like six offensive rebounds, and they went on that little mini version of a big ass run, like an 18-2 run. It blew the thing wide open. I'm looking at it right now. The score I froze 62-44 with a little bit over 9 minutes left, and they just rambled on and took over the game, man.
They're kind of like a UFC fighter or boxer who's like, okay, so I'm going to go into the fight. I feel I can win. Let me see what my opponent has to show. And then once they show
did
me.
Did you just say not, UFC boxer?
UFC or boxer.
Okay, okay. Let's just keep it to boxing, okay?
It's the same strategy, though, for UFC. You know, the same idea. So, like, yeah, you see what your opponent's got for you. And then you make an adjustment. And then. Okay, here's my punch back. Okay, and then you're on the canvas, you're counting to 10. Like, this team, they just, I don't think, they don't get flustered. Like, this team is just good. So, they took a punch, to stick with the boxing analogy, and then they punched, like, three times back. I mean, San Diego State, they're a decent squad this year. Okay, hey, hell, they played them last year. You know, they do their part, and then UConn goes on a run. So, this UConn team, Chris, I still don't forget the show we did last month when UConn played Marquette. They're at Marquette. They're down 15-5. The place is going nuts. Marquette's on a 10-0 run. Everything is going insane. Most teams, I would say 95% of teams are called timeout. You're on the road, down 10 early. Place is jumping. Danny Hurley doesn't budge, doesn't sweat. What's the team do? They go on a 10-0 run themselves. And in the first under 16 timeout, the game's tied. Like, teams in college basketball don't counter runs with their own runs when games start off on the road in a hostile environment. That just doesn't happen.
Sometimes
so
not even in the NBA, you know?
I was like, okay, this team is, and it's not like, okay, the coach don't care, the coach is, you know, the coach knows, but he knows he's got a team of hoopers. And it's like, okay, we're on a run, but no, my guy's got it. And just they're built differently. But hey, that was against San Diego State. Hey, you had it close in the first half. You were having a low scoring game. But that's the special part about this team is if you look at UConn's box scores, if you want to run and gun with them, cool. They got plenty of guys who can jack threes. If you want to play like kind of small ball or play a half court game or try to go down low with them, they got bigs too. So
yeah, their X's and O's are crazy, some of the plays they drop too.
Yes.
Where you're just like, there wasn't much you were going to be able to do on that play. You know what I mean? I mean, it doesn't really matter. And, you know, it took them a second when they, you know, they didn't have like this elite level non-conference resume as far as wins, right? They didn't just blow away the competition right away. So it took them a little. I mean, they had a new team, right? They had new players coming off a huge run. But then they tightened up. And the only time they got really beat was just Creighton going crazy, you know, in that game where they just, you know, the offense was just nuts, you know, that one game. And it's almost like they needed that to reset because, like you said, that Marquette game was next after that. And so, I mean, they are really impressive, man. I mean, there's not much more you can say about it. We'll talk about that crazy box score in the second half against Illinois when you just look at the score and you're like, wait, what happened? Let's get to Bama and North Kakalaka. North Carolina led at the half. They had a 20-2 record when leading at half. And it definitely was a game of runs. You know, Bama went on an 11-2 run pretty early in that second half. They get up by two. Then all of a sudden, you know, a 9-1 run with less than 9 minutes to play. It's 68-62 North Kakalaka. Just back and forth. Obviously, RJ Davis from three was struggling. I think he got up to like 0-9 or 0-10. But then Bama came storming back. They had a 9-2 run under 2 minutes. The score 79-77 with 4 minutes left. You know, the points in the paint were actually pretty close to even, which we know North Carolina has, you know, a fair amount of bigs, of course. What went wrong there down the stretch? I mean, obviously, you know, don't want to take credit away from Bama or anything because they did their thing. And we know, I mean, how many times were they over 100 this year? Like 7 times or something like that? So we knew they were a damn good team. It just, they didn't necessarily close super strong. So it kind of makes you go, eh, I don't know. But it was a damn good game, though, just a game of runs back and forth.
I really thought that Carolina played too individually in the second half. I remember when there was a stretch that are saying that Carolina had scored like 5 or 6 points in a 6-minute span in the second half. And versus a Bama defense that isn't that good, there's no excuse for that, for the year Carolina had offensively. But if you watch the plays, it was like, okay, RJ Davis is going to do his own thing here, or let's try Baycott here, or let's try South Trimble is going to jack three. Like I feel that they were doing things as individuals and not as a team. And when you play as individuals and you're not, and one guy's not on fire, and Baycott missed a couple of dunks, RJ Davis had one of his worst games of the year. That leads to the game at the end being close. And then that Grant Nelson for Bama took over. But Carolina really just dropped the ball at the start of the second half when that game could have been spread out a little bit for some comfort. And they didn't let that happen. And Bama did their part where they're going to hit their threes and go on their runs. And just down the stretch, the ball wasn't flowing like it should for a team. And I still can't forget I believe Carolina was up 2 with like 90 seconds to go. And they did a pick and roll. And the center who had the ball in his hands was selfish and decided to jack up a three when there was no one within like 15 feet of him. It's like, dude, if there's no guy within 15 feet of you, they're probably giving me that three for a reason. And he clanked it off the rim, and Carolina never led after that. But that comes down to like personal self-control. Like, hey, do I want to jack up a three, or should I look for the betterment of my team? And the dude jacked up a three, and it was a brick, and like that was the last time they had the lead. So just too much individual play, which is frustrating because but as I told my buddies in my group chat, like, oh, we lost, but I'm not upset. Like, I didn't think we'd win a title this year, but it was just sad to see them play the way they did down the stretch, in my opinion.
Yeah, that points of the paint really was pretty telling how that game went. And like you said, RJ Davis, you know, struggling in general, but especially from three. On to the last two games of that night, Caleb Love, speaking of struggling for three, I think he went like 0-8. I think he got to like, I think it was 4-15 or something like that. The, you know, Arizona just went freaking icy, icy cold. Clemson, man, getting offensive rebounds, just great defense, phenomenal defense. And Arizona tried to make, you know, they tried to make it interesting. You know, they definitely tried to, but Zona was just struggling on defense, bricking shots, and, you know, Clemson moved on. And there's this stat from David Warlock. From 2006 to 2019, only 2 number 6 seeds made it to the Elite Eight, but Clemson is the third team to do it in 4 years. Creighton last year, USC in 2021. And then, you know, at the time it said Clemson will try to become the first number 6 seed to reach the Final Four since Michigan in 92, and the 7th, and just the 7th since 1979. They obviously weren't able to do that, but yeah, you know, Caleb didn't play all that good, and you know, some of the things that Zona, some of the issues kind of popped up on him. But Clemson played a hell of a game, and they had a hell of a season, really.
Yeah, you know, they were just really well coached and really focused. I saw them play 2 games in Memphis, which I was a fool and bet against them. But even in Memphis, in their first rounds, that you could tell they were defensively locked in. They had a couple of shooters, and they actually had a couple of, like, bigs who were, like, just good at dribbling the ball off the dribble. So That was just kind of like they found their groove, Chris. They'd had at the start of the year. Remember, at the start of the year, Clemson was like ranked. They were leading the ACC. They were off to a good spot, and then they kind of fell apart in the second half of the season. But they did enough in the regular season. They actually had a great non-conference to earn a tournament bid, and they made it worth it. And as you said, Arizona, again, I said it all year, their Achilles heel was their defense. They can score 90, but when you're playing a team who plays pretty good defense, you got to be able to counter it with your own defense, and they didn't really have that. And, hell, Arizona had the bigs. They had everything, but just defensively, they just had a rough game, and Clemson was probably just the more better coach, more organized team going into that game, and they won.
Yeah, that's a good way to sum it up. Now, the high-profile game here, especially the hard course, Illinois and Iowa State, the first half, I think they were 9 of 31, Iowa State. And, like, with under 10 minutes to play, they were 9 of 16. So they came out pretty damn hot. At the 11-minute mark, Shannon got four fouls. He was up to 20 points at that time. They were up 51 to 43. And you thought, okay, well, let's see. And all of a sudden, a few minutes go by over almost 3-minute stretch. No points. They were struggling from the field. And like I said, it was just the opposite. Iowa State really came running back. They cut it. It was an 8-2 run with Shannon on the bench. I think it went up to like 12-2, but they cut the lead under 6 to play. And it was anybody's game down the stretch.
It really was. Again, you had to favor on paper the highlighted offense with Shannon and compared to Iowa State. Again, Iowa State's Achilles heel was their offense. They played great defense this year. They were undefeated in Hilton Magic Arena. But could they score? And Iowa State, I feel, Chris, Illinois played just fast enough to kind of get Iowa State out of the rhythm. Not that it was like a blowout, like embarrassment, but I think that game was played how Iowa State – or excuse me, I'm confusing the eyes. That game was played how Illinois wanted it to be played. And I just think when you have two teams that are pretty evenly matched, you got to favor an offense that's ranked number one in the country as opposed to an offense that was ranked probably outside the top 100. Now, is Illinois' defense elite? No, but it seems like most time March Madness, Chris, if you have – a really strong offense and a great defense. Normally, to me in basketball, you're going to favor that team to score that normally scores 70 or 80. I'll take them over a team that averages like lower 60s. So a great game. Hey, Iowa State, you had yourself a hell of a year. Nothing to be ashamed of. I don't think they were expecting to cut down the nets this year. So I think you can view the season as a success. But Illinois did their part for that night.
Yeah, and what was it, 3 out of 4 years they made the Sweet 16? Now they just got to get over the hump in the coming years and get, to the Final Four or something like that. But, yeah, I mean, they made their free throws down the stretch. I know Shannon had that steal. I think he hit like 5 free throws down the stretch. He had that steal and a dunk, and it pretty much, they followed a 3-point shooter, made something late, but it was pretty much over after those just being aggressive, getting fouled, hitting their shots too at the free throw line. And then, like I said, once it was that steal and that dunk, it was like, yeah, this is probably over. Moving on to Friday and Friday matchups. Gonzaga, credit to them for making it to the Sweet 16. Would it look like one of their, I hate to say weakest teams, but not one of their top, I wouldn't put this in the top 3 or 5 of the teams they've had since like 99. But they got there, man, and they put up a good fight. Purdue did beat them. I thought that was a really, really solid just because on both sides, Purdue kept moving. They won cleanly. It took, it was a grinded out game for a second, but then they won cleanly, and Purdue kind of slapped all of us in the face for talking smack about them. Like, hey, it's true. You've had your struggles recent years. They had those runs where they were getting to the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight and all that. But the last few, man, they've been struggling in the first round or just in general, round of 32. They've been underachieving, clearly. And, they got the job done there. We, of course, had the big upset, NC State and Marquette, 67-58. We'll get into some of that in a second. That Duke-Houston game was the high profile name anyway. And I was pretty surprised, on how that game turned out. But, before we get into kind of Duke and Houston, NC State knocking it off and then knocking out Marquette and then Purdue, you know, Gonzaga had a good start and everything, but they just kind of steadily warmed down and you know, did their thing. They got a big and they got shooters and they're just pretty solid and they get to the free throw line a lot, generally speaking, you know, not in that game but.
It really did seem, Chris, that the Purdue-Gonzaga game was very similar to Kansas and Gonzaga, just flip-flopping the teams. So if you watch the Kansas-Gonzaga game in the first half, that game was I believe KU's up 1.5, and it was a back-and-forth game. It was like, man, this game could go either way. And, you know, you felt that KU's playing a little bit out of their, you know, above their element. Same thing in that game. Hey, this game could go, again, if you're just a naive basketball fan, haven't watched the game all year, and you're, okay, let's watch this game. And you're like, okay, well, hey, if you're watching it half, hey, Gonzaga can win. And just like Gonzaga kind of ran KU off the floor in the second half of their game, kind of same thing in that game. Purdue's kind of like, dude, we let you play with us in the first half, but all right, now's our time to lock in. And that goes to feeding Edie and then kicking out for threes and just playing really solid defense. I know that I think every game I've watched this year, the announcers talk about how Purdue has the best 3-point defense in the country, or they're the best 3-point shooting team in the country. It's like the announcers can't help but love that team over the top, but I guess they've earned it, whatever.
But I mean, when you have that many shooters over 40%, it has to be mentioned. They're shooting 41%.
I agree with the well-known stats. I guess it's just the fact I've watched every Purdue game and just the announcers just keep repeating themselves. But, you know, hey, fair is fair. You've earned the accolades. Yeah, they just showed Gonzaga in the second half what Gonzaga showed to KU. Like, we're a better team than y'all. We're going to take care of business. And, hey, I called it all year. Marquette cannot shoot threes. What does that team do on their last game of the year? They go 4 of 31 from 3.
Free throws, 14 of 23.
Well, you went, like, what part of just drive? Like, and I know near the end there, sure, when you're down 8, 9, 10 with a minute or two to go, it's probably over. But they were, like, 3 of 26 when, like, the game was still within grasp. Like, that just tells me, like, Shaka or someone, Kolick, the best point guard in the country. Like, dude, you can't work some type of offense. And I know that NC State's been on a heater, and they're not a joke of a team at all. But you go 4 of 31 from 3, and that's how your year ends. It's like, at what point, Chris, do you just stop jacking up threes and try to drive to the line to get fouled? Or at least a free throw in theory is a better odds than going in a three-pointer. Or hit a jump shot or make a layup. Like,
they were 20 of 6, too. They or 60, I mean. And so 31, so a little over half of their shots were threes. They only took 60 shots. They
took 31 threes. Brother.
And to say they weren't getting to the rack, though, I mean, they got to the line 23 times.
Well, you know what I mean? Yeah, I guess.
But you only hit 14 of them.
True.
So that, you're right, though. I think they were jack happy.
Yes, that was their Achilles heel, I thought, that this year. And it really showed. I mean, 4 of 30. Man, that's just a tough way to go out. But, hey, NC State, you know, I bet a lot of people made some money, because I can't take claim for it because I didn't bet it. But when I saw that point spread, I was like, dude, NC State's on a hell of a run, and you're going to make them like an 8 or 9 point dog versus Marquette. Like, that was one of those things where you always say on our college football show, that line feels fishy. I should probably bet it. And I felt that. I just didn't bet it. So I guess I was a fool for not doing that. But hey, NC State, tip your cap. Like, you played well that game, and Marquette just couldn't get a shot to drop. And again, hell, you
and that has to do with defense too, of course.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
They shot 33% from the field in general. I mean, yeah, true. that was something. But yeah, you're right about those threes. And then Creighton and Tennessee, 35-34 at half. Creighton's up, and pretty even game for a little while in that second half. And then Tennessee goes on a really nice run. They open it up. It's 50-39 or something like that. I think they got it all the way up to 55-39. And that was just in 6 minutes of the second half. And you're like, okay, well, this might be a blowout. But credit to Creighton. Creighton. They, I got a message earlier this year. People just don't realize that I say it wrong sometimes because there's a really popular school here called that's something similar. And I always sort of say, I say Creighton instead of Creighton. But anyway, they slowly but surely cut into that lead that had, you know, like I said, it opened up really far. They got, well, six, like 10 minutes later, it's a 3-point game. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, okay, we could do this. And then basically from the 4-minute mark until well under two, they just couldn't, they had a turnover. They had an offensive rebound, missed the layup. You know, they just couldn't get over the hump. And Tennessee just pushed them away enough. Like, hey, you had your little shot. You guys kind of messed up in that 2-3 minute mark. Should have taken advantage. We're just gonna win the game and kind of bleed the clock type stuff.
Yeah, you know, I was doing my best to multitask, brother, because obviously my main attention was on the Duke game. So I had one TV high, one TV low. So I was watching both, but you know, the Duke hatred was kicking in. But you said even first half, very similar to like a Purdue Gonzaga. And then second half, Tennessee did just enough. That Dalton Knecht and Ziegler had decent games for Tennessee. And hey, if you're Creighton, man, like you've consistently been making like the Sweet 16 pretty well. And it just seems like they can't get over that hump. Like I feel that's a team. They don't have many like first round knockouts. Really. They're like a very, they're maybe one of like the best like B level teams in the country. You have a coach who's been there forever, despite his one like media slip. He seems to be a pretty good coach. They get the players. They seem to have a guy get drafted in the NBA every 2 to 3 years. Like they're a really good squad, Chris. I just don't think they're a like a national contender squad. So as a fan, if your team's consistent like a you know a Sweet 16 contender, like you know what more can you do? And I guess from that standpoint, you need to maybe try to get another step of a player up, like. I feel that they're like a very good, consistent team. They're just not quite enough to win a national title. So, I don't know where you go from that standpoint, brother. But like, what do you think? Do you think that's a fair assessment of them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in college sports, there's a fair amount of teams that just are quality programs. And,
true.
You know, 1 year, it may come all together and you finally get it. But it's just tough, man. It's tough to win it all. And I think sometimes – we underrate or undervalue or kind of like are too much what have you done for me lately when sure. They do have a mediocre season and then it's kind of like, well, that coach is going to get fired now. But then they had such a stretch of quality play. I just think there's limits on what certain programs can get or what they can go to, you know. Like, I don't know. There's just so many factories out there that produce pros. And you only have to be there for a year or two. I don't know. I just think that they're kind of in that spot where it's a phenomenal program, but maybe we'd be asking too much for it to win a championship. I don't know.
I do think they are maximizing their potential. I don't think
exactly. They, you know, so it's like how much, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in a lot better spot than they were a chunk of years ago. You know, this Big East now is legit. It's respected and they're in it. You know,
true.
They weren't always in this conference, as we know, you know, so that's another thing. We got to remember that they went up to one of the best conferences and they're a legit team in there. But yeah, it's a good point. I think it kind of goes off, like I said, college sports. Like some people are like, well, first of all, the rich aren't getting richer anymore when it comes to NLI in football or basketball. The rich are not getting richer. That's just would be a false statement. But sometimes when you are now somebody that's quote-unquote rich, like Texas A&M, we'll see what they do with this new coach, but it doesn't always work out as we've seen. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that we're just – I don't know, man. If my Gophers – and we're a much bigger university, you know, and have been in the Big Ten forever. If my Gophers are making the tournament every year and then they make 16 and sometimes Elite Eight, I'd be pretty damn happy, you know, so –
Yeah,
I don't know. It's tough to say. Let's keep it moving, though. We go on to Duke and Houston. And, you know, Roach, 0 points in the first, 14 in the second. And you know, tell me if you've heard this one before, but 3 points in the last 5 minutes, and that's when the game was 54-48 with about a minute left. For that last, from the six-minute mark, right around, a little over the six-minute mark, they scored 3 points, and I'm talking about Houston. We know that they're a killer defensively. Yeah, it's not like Duke put up a bunch of points on this one, but, you know, they just ran out of gas offensively, and Duke did just enough in that just grinded out kind of old-school Big East type game.
I'm going to say it, and you can say, well, you're a Carolina fan, but I truly believe that if
you're a Carolina fan,
if Shedd doesn't get hurt, I think Houston wins or their probability increases. Hats off to them. Like, your leader was your Big 12 player of the year, rolls his ankle severely. He doesn't play the final 30 minutes of the game, and you go neck for neck with a team when your best player was out. So, obviously, I give him credit.
Wild. You said a lot more wilder stuff being a North Carolina fan than that. That's not even wild. that's legit.
But, you know, but also, like, there was, you know, injuries happen. Like, I remember, I think the Golden State Warriors win another title. Klay Thompson has tear his ACL. Like, sport, like Tom Brady, who, you know, like, injuries are part of sports. It's just frustrating, obviously, when I'm cheering against Duke, to see the Big 12 player of the year in Houston's, like, he's their quarterback, like, to get hurt like that. I was, honestly, I'll say this, Chris, I was surprised Houston did as well as they did offensively in the second half. I really thought it was shed out that they were going to kind of get blown out. But a lot of their, like, not role players, but their other guys stepped up and they kind of ran the show. So, hey, credit to them. But hey, if you're Duke, credit to Duke. I will say, man, Shire, he ain't Coach K, but man, that dude, people love ripping on him. I know we're jumping ahead, but that dude takes a lot of backlash on Twitter. So they did win that game. So you gotta give him credit to getting the lead eight. But, for that game, it was fun. In the second half, again, Houston's other players stepped up offensively and Duke answered, whether it was, Filipkowski or Roach or, the dude that had a really bad game in, the lead eight, from Australia. Oh man, I'm drawing a blank on his name. Shoot. Okay. But, Duke's had one other player those three kind of carried the squad and they beat Houston. Again, Houston fans had to be sick to their stomach because I truly believe they're one of the teams that maybe could beat UConn, and to see your guy go out over an ankle sprain, that's a tough one to swallow. But, that is the life we have to endure as sports fans some days.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And yeah, injuries are a part of it. Just to go with the Golden State thing, you know, if Kyrie didn't get hurt in game one, maybe they didn't even win that. You know, maybe Cleveland would have beat them there. You know, you never
truly
really know. You never really know. We can go back to, you know, Chris Paul getting hurt for game six and game seven, too. I had to put those stingers in there. You know what I mean? No, but yeah, you're right. And that's what it comes down to. And we see it in the NBA pretty much every year now. You know, or every other year at least, whether it's someone getting to a conference final that you maybe go, well, if that team was healthy, I don't think they're in the conference final, or, you know, like you said, winning the whole thing.
Proctor, sorry.
OptiStats, this is the first time ever that no team west of the Mississippi River was among the final eight teams remaining in the NCAA tournament. I thought, interesting. On to the UConn, and well, I should just call it the UConn game, especially in the second half. You know, Illinois kept driving and driving and driving, and sometimes maybe they should have taken more shots and maybe more mid-range, not just threes, but it did seem like they were really intent on driving. And, you know, that 16-4 run that just – opened up the floodgates against San Diego State. You know, Illinois had tied the game. They went on like a 12-0 run at the start. I think it was a timeout. And then you look at the box score. And it was only, what, 28-24 or 22 or something like that, 23? Yeah, it was 28-23 in the first. But there was a moment there where it was 28-2. I mean, you're talking about like 30-0 runs, like – like you said right there, I wanted to cut you off so we didn't move too far ahead. But like you said, they did that to a team that could score their ass off, which is just crazy.
I do have to keep picking my pace. I do get my picture in. I don't know what to say. You went on a 30-0 run. That happened 3 years ago in college basketball, but it was like a Horizon school or a MAC school in a regular season game. But to do that in the Elite Eight game versus a elite team who has a lottery player, like, I would love to know the last time that happened against two ranked teams playing each other. Like, no slap in the face to that MAC or Horizon school. But when's the last time Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, KU played each other and they went on a 30-0 run?
I mean, maybe like that UNLV Duke national championship game where they won by 30 or 40 or something. But I mean, it's crazy, dude. It was crazy.
He even tried calling timeouts to slow the rundown, which that's what's a coach to do. And
that just caught their air. They're like, thanks, man. We needed some water. Now we'll just go back at it. No problem.
So if you're an Illinois fan, hey, we're down 2.5. We got a chance. And then you don't score for 28 more points. Shit, you'll probably never see that again. They're built differently. That's all I got, Chris. That's the best analysis I have. This UConn team is built differently. I've said it all year, and I'm just that's all I got. That's amazing. We probably won't see that again for another 10, 20 years in the Elite Eight or in the NCAA tournament. Even when it's 16
teams playing,
damn
good. Team was playing really good coming in at all too. So that's what makes it scary. Like you said, the quality of opponent that we're playing at their peak powers. And when you look at the box score, you're like, what happened? So Clemson had a good start. That's for sure. Alabama, you know, it's not like they were way down or anything like that. They actually led at half. It was kind of a grinded out game there for a second. And you started to see Alabama appear that they're going to pull away. And credit to Clemson. They kept, like, battling back, tying it up, getting within two. And, you know, like I said, every time they're going to get up, they're up, you know, 6 points, 7 points, boom, right back in the game. So I thought Clemson really battled, even down, you know, it was, 71-62 with 5 minutes left. And, you know, they were within range. They were within striking range. They cut it down to 76-73 with 2 minutes left. They just couldn't get over the hump. And Alabama, man, their first Final Four ever.
Hey, the Tiger can't change its stripes quote, whatever the hell that goes. Like, Bama doesn't play differently. I know that's like a sport cliche, but they are literally going to run in jack threes. If they go in, they're hot. If they don't, they're cold. But that team literally does not play, like, they don't play a different style. Like, they, you know, like, going back to the start, like, boxers have their own style. The Alabama just jacks.
They're trying to put up 100 points.
That's all we're going to do. Yeah, and if you match us, cool. If we're breaking our threes, we're probably only going to make 70. We don't play that great a defense. But we're going to run in jack threes, and that's what they did. And the biggest issue for Clemson was their two great bigs, Hall and the other guy, white guy's name, that Ian's his first name. They both got into foul trouble. Those guys really had avoided foul trouble the whole tournament. So when your two best guys who kind of carried your squad down low of getting the foul trouble each, that's a tough spot to bounce back from. I believe Hall fouled out with like 8 minutes to go. So when you, or five, but when you miss out one of your bigs, that's just, and again, bigs don't normally score twos. They normally don't score threes. So, hey, Bama played their style. They outplayed and outcoached UNC, and they got past Clemson. They took care of two ACC schools. So hats off to them for making a well-deserved Final Four.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Tennessee moving on. Tennessee got up early, had a nice lead. I think they're up like 29-21, even a little bit more earlier in that first half. By the end of it, though, Purdue had cut the lead. So it was like, okay, here we are. You know, no big deal. I think, like you said, I'll bring it up again because I know you like it. Purdue can shoot threes. They're really good at it. But they were 1 of 8 in that first half. I think they're like 0-6 or something like that. It was 36-34. Purdue was up. They got to the free throw line, 9 out of 13 right there. Zachary had 19 and 10 already. The two stars were just nuts in this. But the key was like if they were 1 of 8, right? And freaking Tennessee were 7 of 13 from three, and they weren't leading at half. That's because they were 5 of 19 from 2, whereas that's the key with Purdue in this game. They were 12 of 22 at the half and had 24-8 advantage on the points in the paint. and rebounds, of course. And then all of a sudden, the first handful of minutes in that second half, foul problems on Tennessee. And obviously Eddie, you know, that's what's going to happen. He gets to the foul line a lot, and two bigs of theirs gotten foul problems. Now, you know, that kind of slowed them down. They were going these little droughts, and then Purdue would get up. And there was a point where it was like 30-10 at points in the paint. But to Tennessee's credit, man, they kept fighting all the way back, and it's like under 10 minutes, they make like a 9-0 run, and they're only, you know, they're right there. I mean, they're right there. If you cut it down to 6:55 mark, it's 56-56. I mean, it was a hell of a game. Like I said, both of the stars came out. Like if you look at, you know, if you look at, I don't know, it was just a really fun game, and it had been 40 years since Purdue made the tourney. They got it done. They're trying to do what Virginia, 1980 or something like that, since they've been to the Final Four. I mean, it's been a long time, but Dalton and Zach for their squads, man. The first game in the NCAA tournament history in which both teams have a single player score at least half of its points per ESPN stat. I mean, he hit six threes. What's-his-toes had 16 boards and obviously a huge block. Eddie at the end of that. I mean, and he played all but 33 seconds. So for a big, you know, the minutes there, that's impressive for a big to play that much, you know, time on the court.
I think the only person with better cardio is Caitlin Clark, who played all 40 minutes against LSU. And that woman runs around everywhere.
A foot to her height in a bunch of ways.
She'd be the Wembanyama of college basketball for women. we could do a podcast on her game alone, but that may be another day. I just felt that, Chris, unless it was Connect hitting shots, I felt that everyone else on Tennessee really struggled to score easy buckets. Like, they had a couple of transitions, but Connect really hit those threes. But, like, and this is credit to Purdue's defense. But unless Connect was spot up and hitting a three, I felt that their offense was just struggling to get a quality shot off. So, hey, tip of the cap, Tennessee made it that far. Clearly, their offense had been working before. But again, the announcers, they love this Purdue team, in my opinion. I think it's a little bit too much over the top, but I'll save that rant for another day. But hey, they played.
Hey, but they did get dumped on these last 2 years, too. So let's not forget about that, including you.
Yeah, well, that's okay. So we've talked about the game, but this is my one point.
They literally, you know, they deserve criticism, but now they deserve some praise. That's all.
Yeah, I just think that they're wondering, like, well, why do people doubt? Why do people doubt us? Well, dude, you lost to a 16. Unless you win a title, like, I just think they're like, people hate us. Well, you did lose to a 16. So, but, you know, if I was a Purdue fan, I'd probably be saying the same crap, too. But I just think, like, you are going to get some, you know, backlash because you pulled off a really bad moment in history, but you are bouncing back now, and you did your part to make it to the Final Four. So hats off to them. I guess it just depends on the side of the spectrum you're on there. But overall, hey, Edie was
unstoppable. You just don't like Big Ten teams, that's all.
Edie played really well.
Or Virginia, because you did the same thing with Virginia.
True. I thought that Estrella off the bench, Tennessee's no-name kid, came off and held Edie to 4 points in like 10 minutes. Estrella played phenomenal defense on Edie. And Purdue's guards were not quite as sharp as usual. But again, Tennessee's offense, when it came down to it, unless Connect was busting a three, they really didn't get a flow to him. So, again, I'll tip the cap to the Boilermakers defense. And they advanced to the Final Four. And, we like you said, we have a very interesting all-around Final Four, my friend.
Yeah, you know, really, like, grinded out ugly game that Duke was in again, especially in the first half, obviously. 27-21, you know.
That was ugly to watch.
Yeah, that was a grinded out, dude. That was rough. But you know, they had the lead for the first like 6-7 minutes, and then it was kind of back and forth there for a second. And still it was only 42-39. NC State took the lead at the 11-minute mark, and then they went on a stretch there where they were able to get enough separation. In a game like this, 8 points or 10 points is separation, major separation. And that once they got it to double digits, even though it was still 7 minutes left, I was like, dude, they're gonna do this, man. You know, and Burns had something to do with either scoring or passing, or I mean, it seemed like every other time. I mean, the guy. This is what I love about college. And Jokic is like, I love that guy. It's like, yeah, I wonder why. You know, like you guys have similar games. Like you look at it and go, well, I don't know. But then he's got 29 points. You know, so just clutch, man. Just clutch. They like I said, they got that separation and never looked back, man. They played so good down the stretch not to allow the Blue Devils to make a run.
I think, you know, and it was interesting because they interviewed DJ Burns after the game and the announcer was like, what changed? And you can tell he paused for a second. He's like, dude, he's like, people started coming to practice on time and we all kind of got back on the same page. And that's that stuff where, like, you know, maybe you don't realize it, but obviously me being like, I'm just a high school coach, but there's something to be said for, like, you know, sometimes when you're at a rough season, like, people get checked out, whether it's the coaches, the
players.
Yeah,
people dragging around, put their head down, you know. Thinking about the transfer portal.
Yeah, I don't want to come to practice. What, who cares if we're 10 minutes late for practice, coach? Like, we ain't making the turn, you know. And all it takes is one win to switch that, which I got to experience last year for one of my best years of coaching. Like, we had the biggest win in our school's softball history, like, since I've been here. And it changed everything. So sometimes all it takes is one day or one player, one moment to say, like, okay, hey, now we're back on the same page, like LFG, you know. But up until that moment, it can derail. And again, the rumors are, I don't believe it's rumors, probably pretty much facts, that if NC State had not won the ACC tournament, their coach was going to be fired. So you went from guys apparently being late to practice and coach out the door to, dude, you're in the Final Four. And obviously that coach ain't going to get fired now. So sometimes all it takes is, can we get on the same page? And when you watch that team play, again, as I said, UNC didn't play as a team. NC State does. Whether it's feeding Burns and he's having his fun down low, cooking people, or, you know, the guard, you know, like that they share the ball well.
And, yeah, they get the best shot.
And they play really solid defense. Like, you know, Duke wasn't elite this year, but they were good. They really locked down Duke's offense. They really locked down Duke defensively very well in the second half. And again, I thought that Shire was a bit crazy to bring Philip Kowski in with 8 minutes to go, only down like 4-5. I thought you should have let him probably wait till 4 to 5 minutes. He ended up fouling out, and that probably kind of drawed the end of it for Duke. So sure. That was a bit of a crazy call. I
mean, hey, but a 5-6 point lead in that game is a huge lead, though. But no, you're right. That's a good point.
And as a coach, you're a lose-lose. You want to have your best guy on the court, but I didn't think it was quite in that dire range yet. But he came back and fouled out with 5 minutes to go. So, yep. Hey, hats off to NC State. Your coach's going to get fired. Now you're dancing in the Final Four. So that big and their guard with the same last names, like, they're just a fun team, man. Like, that, they're a good story. And you can't help but love their big man, too, just dropping little baby hooks and the dads in the crowd going crazy, too. So,
same first names.
Yeah.
NC State. Like Jeff Goodman, NC State's insane 19 days. March 12th, they beat Louisville. They were down in that game a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Louisville's struggling. Yep. Louisville is struggling. Now, it looks like they're going to, you know, they're probably going to be on the up and up once they, you know, we know what they got to do to bring back that program. We're not going to get into it, though. But March 12th, beat Syracuse. March 14th, beat Duke. March 15th, beat Virginia. March 16th, won the tournament against the AC tournament, UNC. Beat Texas Tech, like, you know, from the 16th to the 21st. Beat Texas Tech. Beat Oakland, who would beat Kentucky. Beat Marquette in the Sweet 16. Then beat, like, it's really fun, dude. And another thing that someone pointed out, a lot of centers deep in this tournament. We're starting to see the center position, or at least big man of some sort, most of the time center in the NBA, coming back a little bit. Now, we're never going to have the center power for depth like they used to, like in the 80s and 90s especially, but the big man is coming back, okay? And the ratings, we'll get in. We'll finish with that Monday night a little bit, just real quick, because the ratings from that was crazy and all that with the women's side. But that NC State-Duke game was the biggest rated game in that Elite Eight slot in like 5 years or something, 15 million. Even that Tennessee-Purdue went 10. So the ratings are way up. Well, they're way, way up, obviously, in the last 2-3 years in women's, and especially recently, obviously, and we know why. But overall, you know, it's doing really, really good. So it's all, you know, we keep hearing college basketball, college football, it's just, it's broken and this and that. And instead of just going to the extreme, let's say, yeah, there are some things with the portal that we need to figure out. There is some stuff that we need to figure out, but don't act like it's freaking broken, dude, because that's just nonsense, man.
I completely agree. I could go on that rant too, but dude, next year we're going to have a college football playoff, which is going to deliver some of the coolest college football environments ever. When a D1 high ranked team hosts the playoff game, that environment's going to be freaking nuts. And I can't wait to watch that on TV or maybe go to it in person. That stuff's going to be insane. And so, see what people say then.
So Alabama has a role player coming back, right, for the UConn game. I can't remember his name, but it's like 9 or 10 points. And I saw someone in the comments say, all right, now they're going to lose by 20. they have an 11.5-point spread. Are you looking at that spread and wondering if you should take it? Is it finally UConn's going to be in a close game? Or are you just kind of putting UConn not only to the, you know, to the final, but the whole thing? I mean, what are we doing here? Because, you know, maybe they get in the score fest. Because Bama could do that.
I'm doing UConn for the whole thing. Again, Alabama, I think if you're going to be UConn, you have to be a defensive-laden team, which Marquette and Creighton showed signs of, and that's why they made them work in the Big East. But Alabama, they want to jack up and play offense. Okay, cool. But UConn probably has better three-point shooters than you do. And, again, you have to find a way to stop them. Like, their offense is just such a beautiful, like, machine to watch. I just don't see where the stops come from. Okay, could you maybe drop 80 on them? Sure, but if you drop 80 on UConn, my gut tells me they're going to drop 95 on you. I just think it's a tough matchup just because Bama's not showing that defensive ability. And if you can't play defense against them, like, and again, UConn just went on a 30-0 run against Illinois, who is probably better offensively than Alabama. So what are they going to do to you, you know?
Or just as good. That's
Yeah. I mean, it depends which stats I look at, but for sure, they're on the same ballpark. Again, Alabama, you're gonna hit your threes, but again, UConn defensively is a good team. I know we like to, you know, get all crazy about their offense, but defensively they're no joke. Again, you do not go on a 30-0 run, Chris, if you don't play defense like that. I know the numbers speak offensively, but how the hell do you not let a team score like 15 to 16 possessions in a row? Like, man, that's the other way to flip it. You gave a 30-0, you got a 30-0 run, but defensively, that means you didn't give up a bucket for probably 5 or 6
that's
minutes.
That's what makes it crazy.
Like, goddamn.
To do that against that team, that's what's wild.
Yeah. So Bama's got pieces, cool. But they just, I think they're just head and shoulders the best team left in the tournament. And I don't, maybe the other side, well, I don't, but I just don't see them losing. And this is Vegas' way of giving respect. Like, you normally never see a double-digit spread in the Final Four, but I don't think you can make UConn a 9-point favorite, or else Vegas would go broke for a night, sir.
Yeah, I know, right? I still think it will shrink down because people will be like, nah, dude, once they get there, you know, on Saturday, nah, bro, this is the Final Four, bro. There's no way, you know?
But it won't dip to single digits, though.
According to ESPN Analytics, which we are, you know, we're all about, 89.6% chance that Purdue beats NC State. It opened at 8.5. Now it's at 9.5. Or I'm sorry, it opened at 9.5. Now it's at 8.5. I think that'll be a competitive game. I do think Purdue will knock down their threes in this game. But I definitely see this being, you know, a better game, obviously. I got Purdue, but talking about UConn-Purdue, the only thing that kind of stays with me is the fouls that the big man for Purdue can, you know, can draw. And then those three-point shooters. I know, but they're shooting 41% of the team. And I remember, I've been not trying to stress this like I did with Baylor. Remember that year where they had like 7 guys that could shoot 39% and above or something like that? In college basketball, that's crazy. In either one, NBA or college.
True.
So the fact that they got a big that can draw fouls, they can play defense themselves, and they can knock down shots, I think they can make it a competitive game with UConn. And then the only thing that's in my head is, man, it is hard to repeat, you know? It's very hard to repeat. And we haven't done it since, what, Florida, right? So,
yes.
And that's a while ago, as we know.
True.
That's when we became friends right around that time. Yeah. So, and they, but the thing is, they brought back their team, you know what I mean? So, whereas they didn't bring every guy, key guy back, they got a, you know, so I guess that lingers as far as Purdue could upset them because they can draw fouls, because they can, you know, and he's pretty good at the free throw line, and they can knock down shots and play D. But I think they're going to D up those guards like crazy. And you know, like you said, I think we're going to finally see the repeat. I'm with you. I think UConn's going to repeat.
The one tough thing, I love NC State center, but I don't think he's really got the body or the defensive skills to guard Edie. I do think
it is a different matchup.
Yeah, I do think as a team, NC State's defense will maybe guard the perimeter, but like Burns is just he's a good big, and he might be able to score on Edie, but I don't see him stopping him. And if he gets in foul trouble, hey, there goes one of your go-to guys, which I'm sure they'll probably put him on Edie. And again, he doesn't got the height. Like, I know he's got the moves, and I love the guy, but he's not really a lockdown defender type guy. So,
They get 5 days to really break it down and everything. You know, you get extended time.
I want NC State to win, but I also think that Vegas has done the right thing. They're making them the favorites that they are. Because, hey, if you slow down Edie, cool. But they're going to hit threes. But also, Edie's been averaging 30 points a game in the tournament, so people are not really slowing him down. And NC State doesn't have much depth either, so I don't see how that upset occurs. I would say NC State has a better chance of beating Purdue than Bama beating UConn, but I really don't know what kind of statement that's really making, Chris.
Exactly. And then real quick, we had the doubleheader, Elite Eight doubleheader, the rematch, Iowa and LSU, and then UConn-USC as well, which was a good game after that. The 41 points we've seen Caitlin score, right? But the 10 assists, the 10 plus assists, actually, I should say, she's done that twice now. That's actually what does it for me. The fact that she was able to throw double digits assists in there. But it did seem like her threes just kept at the beginning of second half. Well, it's still the second half, but the third quarter, it's like she hit a three. Then she backed it up a little bit, hit a three. And she backed it up for – it was like by the fourth three, it was like, you're really far away. There was not much they were going to be able to do. LSU did make a run back and everything, but they had – you know, the way they started both halves I thought was really key because LSU was always trying to come back. But a great performance, and that actually beat the record all the way back to 1983. Cheryl Miller – her first title at USC in 1983, that was 11.8 million, right? I don't think they were doing peak numbers then, but
sure.
This one in Elite Eight too was 12.3 million, so it's the largest ever women's college basketball audience measured by Nielsen. And like I said, Cheryl Miller all the way back to 1983. And a lot of these records were like 1995 and, you know, since 1990, you know, so it's like the mid-90s is where college basketball for women started popping off. It didn't fall off, but it wasn't as strong because I think UConn was just beating everybody there for a while. And then in the last chunk of years, it's really gotten going. And when you have Caitlin, a name like that, and then you need a dancing partner, right? Because that's what – just talk about boxing, right? You have an A side and a B side. Well, the dancing partner – was perfectly lined up based off of last year, which that was the second biggest rating of all time behind that Cheryl Miller game with USC. And now they went over the top. And honestly, the game after that was really good, and it ranked really well. Like, even non-Iowa games this year, when it comes to the name brands, the UConns, the South Carolina, the LSU, these ratings have been crazy all across the board as well. It's not just top heavy. The top is heavy, but it's not. It's really starting to grow, man. And when you look at Juju Watkins, who broke the freshman scoring record, like, we got a lot of girls on the women on the up and up too. So it's in a great spot right now, man. It's really cool to see.
Caitlin Clark is special, man. Like, to hit, like, 10 threes and, like, seven of them were, like, Curry range, like, that was just a fun game to watch, and she's a great thing for women's sports. And I'm not going to put up to the level of what Tiger Woods did for golf, but I do think that she's going to inspire a lot of younger girls to play basketball, like Tiger Woods did for golf. It's maybe not quite that high, but it's in that same idea of she's going to
open
the door.
Maya Moore is who inspired her. She was, like, crying when she met her when she was older. And that's what I'm saying. And now we're getting even a few years separated. Like, I'm looking up to that person, and I'm in college, you know? So that's when it gets really scary, like scary good.
That's just awesome. I can't wait to see where she goes in WME. I hope that she has great success there, too. I kind of hinted it, but just to confirm, I'm with you, Chris. I do think that UConn will be the repeat champions as well. That team, they're just special, man. That's a different squad. They truly are. Let me just ask you this to wrap it up.
I don't have time. I really don't have time. I got
to go. Well, on that note, we will be ready to break down the Final Four. Hopefully the games are a bit closer than double-digit point spreads predict, but we will see. So until then, we appreciate the support. We love it. We appreciate y'all. It's been a fun basketball season. Hey, a couple games to go, and then we got NBA playoffs. And, man, dude, I know my co-hosts can't wait to talk about the Timberwolves in the playoffs this year. So until then, the boys are out this afternoon. Have a good one. Peace.